Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement. A Connecticut prisoner reports that police brutality is the growing plague.
A Wisconsin prisoner spreads revolutionary literature.
And an essay by Mamiya Abu-Jamal. The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
The following is an essay by a Connecticut prisoner who is reporting that police brutality is a growing plague. Even though crime statistics show a decrease in violent crime, the amount of police brutality being inflicted upon people of color is on the rise. From 1991 to 1997, the illegal murder rate dropped from 9.8 to 6.8 per 100,000 people. In some cities, the drop in illegal murderers in 1998 was drastic in the last year alone. New York had a 20% drop in murder in 1998, and Los Angeles had 27% fewer murders last year. In cities with a population of a million or more, the murder rate fell from 35.5 per 100,000 people in 1991 to 20.3 per 100,000 in 1997. The homicide closure rate, the amount of homicides they arrest or summarily execute someone for, has fallen from 54% in 1991 to 39% in 1998. In the country overall, the FBI says there is a 66% closure rate on homicide. Abuses such as unjustified shootings, severe beatings, fatal choking, and other forms of brutal physical treatment by police have been reported in cities throughout the United States. On October 1, 1998, Philadelphia police shot 18-year-old Dante Dawson to death while he sat unarmed in a car. In January 1999, four Riverside, California police officers, three being white and one Latino, brutally fired 12 rounds of ammunition into the body of 19-year-old Taisha Miller, killing her while she sat in her car having a seizure. In December 1998, a white Milford, Connecticut police officer by the name of Scott B. Smith shot and killed Franklin Reed, a black man in his late 20s, in his back while he sat handcuffed on his knees. And more recently, in February of 1999, undercover New York police officers fired 41 rounds at Amadou Diallo, a 22-year-old West African man, striking him 19 times. Diallo, who died on the scene, happened to be unarmed. Police say they were looking for a rapist. However, Diallo was not the suspect they sought. The list goes on and on. There are just too many reported incidents to put them all on paper. The growing wave of police brutality is not something new that sprung up overnight. For nearly a century, the police have been systematically murdering minorities here in the United States of America. Some may argue and say these are just isolated incidents committed by rogue police officers. But how can these incidents be isolated when reports show that the majority of victims of police brutality and excessive force are young, unarmed, not criminal suspects, and are from ethnic minorities? Police officers are none other than the hired hitmen of the bourgeoisie, whose interests they're hired to serve and protect, not the people in our communities. Police officers are hired to keep people of color right where they've been placed by the rich ruling class, in the ghettos and low-income neighborhoods of America. This was the motto behind the lynchings in the South after the abolishment of chattel slavery, quote, to keep the nigger in his place, end quote. Whenever the line is crossed that divides the suburbs from the ghetto, the police are there to make sure the property and material possessions of the bourgeoisie are protected. This is why so many black men are harassed when driving through upper-class neighborhoods. This growing wave of police lynchings all over the country is a means of social control. Let's not forget the way black people were constantly harassed, beaten, hosed down, and killed by police officers during the civil rights era. Where was the motto, to serve and protect, then? We are dealing with a paramilitary force of sick-minded, brutal savages who turn nonviolent demonstrations violent. It's no coincidence that all throughout the country, police stations are turning towards military methods of control and equipment. The National Defense Authorization Act enables law enforcement agencies around the country to receive expensive but used military equipment for free, from rifles to helicopters to bulletproof helmets and vests. Despite the drop in national crime rate, police stations are gearing up like never before. In 1997, approximately 1.2 million items worth an estimated $248 million were transferred from the armed forces to state and federal officials on a first-come, first-served basis. Jasper, Florida, with a population of 2,000 and a homicide rate of zero, employs only 7 police officers, but has just as many helicopters and several more machine guns. They got the equipment by logging on to the publicly accessible Pentagon website, which lists what's available and dispatches equipment to whatever agency wants it. That's how the Los Angeles Police Department picked up 600 M16 rifles last year. America has become a police state under the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie, which is nothing short of fascism. This is why the police force is becoming militarized. What many of us fail to realize is that the police are not there to serve and protect the people. They are there to suppress, repress, and maintain social control over people so that the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie is not threatened with takeover. It is a fact that people who live in low-income communities have a high amount of revolutionary potential, and this is one of the reasons why both state and federal government have begun to militarize the police force. The growing prison-industrial complex also plays a significant role in controlling the population and social order of a rebellious youth. The media is used as a tool to deceive and scare the masses through propaganda into believing that violent crime poses a threat to the safety and security of society, and that more police and more prisons are needed to maintain order. This is very detrimental to people of color here in the United States, because not only do we have to worry about some scared, racist, white person trumping up charges against us, we also have to worry about our own elders turning us over or delivering us into the hands of this lynch mob called our police force. Our elders turn to these cowboys for protection from their own children, while these very same cowboys are killing their children almost every day in the streets. Did the police really care about the protection and rights of people of color? Are they truly sympathetic to the everyday struggles minorities have to face in this country? How can they be when most police either live in the suburbs or grew up there, not having to face the everyday hardships of today's society? And then they're going to come into the ghetto and protect its people? I find this to be full of irony, an affront to obscure the real and true objective, which is part of a global economic and political trend towards the undemocratic concentration of power and reliance on repression to maintain social control in a period of intensifying economic exploitation. They want social control of rebellious youth, they want slave labor, and they want to keep the white nations politically united in opposition to the nations it oppresses. The crack boom was great for the police state because it helped all these purposes. A police force is needed. I'm not an anarchist, nor do I uphold anarchist ideology, but we need a police force that truly works for the proletariat and the lumpen proletariat so that we can really protect our communities and people from the real threat, the government and racist white cops. The only way to establish this is by uniting with people of all colors and building a national united front and demanding that the present police force stay out of our neighborhoods and provide safety and security for ourselves. United, we rise above. This report was written by a Connecticut prisoner.
A Wisconsin prisoner spreads revolutionary literature. He writes, "If we want justice in this world, we will have to fight for it, because the only thing we'll get in this world is their law. Greetings, my beloved comrades. I just received your MIM notes. Thank you very much. I have at least 10 men in line to read them once I'm finished. We are all on their administrative confinement, about 30 Africans, 10 Hispanics, and 3 or 4 whites. Something is wrong with that picture. but I'm trying to keep these brothers of all colors reading more than these Mary Had a Little Lamb books that they tried to push off on us from the prison library. So thank you for working with me and sending me good, truthful stuff to read and pass on. A prisoner in Wisconsin.
This is an essay by Mamiya Abu-Jamal entitled A Taste of Philly Justice. With Mamiya's access to the media limited, this essay is read by the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League. See for yourself why the United Snakes wants to silence the revolutionary leader, Mamiya Abu-Jamal.
A Taste of Philly Justice by Mamiya Abu-Jamal. The entire complex of labor regulations and criminal laws was enforced by a police apparatus and judicial system in which blacks enjoyed virtually no voice whatsoever. Whites staffed urban police forces as well as state militias, intended, as a Mississippi white put it in 1865, to keep good order and discipline amongst the Negro population. Although disorder was hardly confined to blacks, virtually all the militiamen patrolled Black Belt counties, often composed of Confederate veterans still wearing their gray uniforms. They frequently terrorized the black population, ransacking their homes to seize shotguns and other property, and abusing those who refused to sign plantation labor contracts. Eric Foner, Reconstruction, America's Unfinished Revolution, 1863-1877. When one looks at the roots of the state's police, we can see clearly the historical traces of what we see today. Police as agents of state corporate white power, organized to protect their interest and to oppose the interest of the poor and the black, to keep good order and discipline amongst the Negro population. The recent case of a young black teen named Dante Dawson, killed by a Philadelphia cop in October 1998, illustrates this point beyond question. The killer cop, named DePasquale, was charged with, surprise, manslaughter, was recently dismissed from that charge by a municipal court judge, who, in the very first week of 1999, determined that his shooting of an unarmed teenager did not rise to the level of a crime, and given his fear at the time, wasn't manslaughter. At least five other cops testified that they too would have done the same thing had they the opportunity, and the judge, after a few hours, agreed. Case dismissed. A 19-year-old youth, sitting in his own car, sitting in his own neighborhood, minding his own business, because of some twisted picture in those cops' heads, was shot to death. His crime? It doesn't even rise to driving while black, DWB. It was sitting in his car and being black. Most elected and appointed black officials, their souls sworn to the very state that armed, trained, and pointed that police pestilence upon their neighborhoods, have had nothing meaningful to say about it. Their silence on the death of their youth at the hands of a maddened, murderous police force betrays, once again, their complete obedience and slavish complicity to the system, not to their people. But words are not power, and no matter what they say, they don't have the power to transform that fatal and tragic reality, nor of offering any hope to the tens of thousands of youths who face the fate of becoming tomorrow's Dante. How can they speak out against their political bedfellows, those they have sworn their careers to? The press, ever vigilant in their role as public prosecutors of the poor, ran no editorials calling for DePasquale's prosecution on harder charges, nor for his conviction on tougher charges. Their job wasn't to convict him. Their job wasn't to prosecute him. The young life of Dante Dawson, his murder, and the trial and serious conviction of those who slew him wasn't really a priority, wasn't important, and wasn't done. Once again, the death of Dante Dawson was an expression of the cheapness of African-American life. Dante's life was cheap to the police. Dante's life was cheap to the judiciary, for both have cheated him, and by extension, his family and his community. John Africa wrote many years ago, "Politics have robbed you blind and dug a pit to trap your witness. Why do you think you have policemen? Who do you think jails are for? Crime lies in the den of excess. Prison is for those in need, as a need is an instinct that must be fulfilled, and the jail is the smokescreen to curb that fulfillment. While the jails are abundant with people of crime, it is those who misled them that are the chief criminals. The system ain't no solution. It is the problem." By Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.